Good morning to you, Tucson, and all of Southern Arizona. Welcome into the Common Workspace Studios for this morning's drive time hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I am your host, Zach Yenser. Full show ahead. Thanks for joining us. Happy Wednesday, July 21st. We'll be with our faith and culture contributor, Pastor Jeff Loxton. Who needs God when we've got Google? We'll work on that question together today. An existential question. We'll solve it in 30 minutes. Just kidding. Probably not, but we'll dive in. Faith and culture contributor, Pastor Jeff Loxton. When we are done at the bottom of the hour, iconic, I call him iconic. I think he is. Iconic Tucson muralist, Joe Padgick. If you don't know who he is, if you don't know what he looks like, you've seen his murals. I 100% agree. You cannot drive anywhere in this town or go into a lot of buildings, in fact, without seeing a Joe Padgick mural. He will be in studio, a rare media community appearance. You'll see him painting, but you won't often see him in front of a mic. We'll be with him and Kristen Tovar of Why I Love Where I Live, a special Meet the Artist event later on in the week at the MSA Annex, so we'll cover that as well. But I cannot wait to meet this guy, his first time on the show. I'm a huge fan. Pastor Jeff Loxton, Hope City Church, good morning to you. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Zach.
It's good. Always good to see you. Good to see you live and in studio. So I sent you this piece, and we're going to scratch the surface.
Right.
And we probably needed 2 weeks to review a 17-page guest essay in the New York Times titled, what is the title? That's a good title. It's titled, Can Silicon Valley Find God? Who needs God when we've got Google? Who needs God when we've got Google? And I think it's an interesting question. Let me set it up, because I'd love to get your thoughts. You're the pastor of a church. You're in the pulpit every week. You're speaking to congregations. We want to bridge this faith and culture thing. And it talks about how really the 17-page essay came to be because of a growing awareness of the harms and dangers of artificial intelligence. I'm a technology guy. I love technology. I'm not anti-change. But there's a growing appetite to hold Silicon Valley to account for its creations. Over the past several years, scholarly research has exposed the often discriminatory assumptions baked into machine learning. We saw in the 2016 presidential election how social media algorithms can be easily exploited. Advances in artificial intelligence are transforming labor, politics, land, language, and space. There's a rising demand for computing power, which means more lithium mining, more data centers, more carbon emissions. Sharper image classification algorithms mean stronger surveillance capabilities, which can lead to intrusions of privacy and false arrests based on faulty face recognition and a wider variety of military applications. And there's many people who say, look, humanity is going to come to a reckoning on this as it continues. AI, artificial intelligence, dictates so many of the things that we do. And this piece talks about how many technologists regard traditional religions as sources of subjugation rather than enrichment. But the writer of this says, wait a second, there is something valuable to be asking. What does it mean to be human in the midst of this? Are we users or are we beings? Fascinating piece, faith and culture. Who needs God when we have Google? Your thoughts real quick.
Yeah, I mean, we're living in an interesting time where we have access to things that we have never had access to before. Technology, AI has experienced these quantum leaps. And so one has to ask the question, and I think we're talking to two different people on that continuum, if you will. There are those who would say, I want nothing to do with it. I see, or I think I see where this is leading, whereas there's others who choose to embrace it. I prefer to be one who embraces it and uses it for, to maximize our opportunities to be able to to relate to the people around us, but I have great friends that prefer not to engage it at all. So I think it's an interesting question. I think the article obviously goes deeper into that question and raises several different thoughts along the way. What were some other things that you took from that article?
You know, interesting that there is, what this article speaks to is there is this rising secularism within technology, and I thought this was funny. And I'm not anti anything. I'm more pro than anti anything. But this piece gives kind of a funny look. They cite a scene from the HBO series Silicon Valley, which is satire. But here's the quote: "You can be openly polyamorous, and people here will call you brave." This is the show, by the way. Mm-hmm. "You can put micro doses of LSD in your cereal, and people will call you a pioneer." Mm-hmm. One character says, "Again, this is satire. I just want to be clear.
Sure,
this is satire, and it's a quote. But the one thing you cannot be is a Christian." And this New York Times piece talks about how there's this growing groundswell of saying, wait a second, as our artificial intelligence grows, we've been talking for 30 years about how humanity is probably not built to be fully immersed in the AI world because of how it dictates who we are and how we think. Maybe it is good to say, look, in Genesis, like, let's go back to 4,000 years of spiritual text. And by the way, this is a multi-faith effort, AI and faith, that is growing out of Silicon Valley. It's a multi-faith effort to say, wait a second, we have this religious tradition of humans as co-laborers in creation, which is super spiritual language, co-laborers for the purpose of good. A growing admiration for individuals who are using their religious traditions towards advancing justice and combating the worst impulses of capitalism. This was an interesting quote because we've been talking about a more humble politics, a more humble religion. This is a New York Times writer that some of these groups who are trying to pair faith with culture, faith with AI, a more better humanity, share an admirable humility, quote, about what they do not and cannot know about the world. It is a humility that the technology industry and its political and legal offshoots sorely lacks. And I think it's interesting because you and I have been taking a very critical look in a positive way at the church and how faith and culture connect. And I thought this piece really started to talk about, wait a second, as we get more technologically advanced, we don't actually become less detached from the bigger ideas in our humanity. We actually get more connected as we ask, what does it mean to be human? And unlike AI, where we react, humans get to shape the reality that they are in. What separates humans from plants? It's that ability. We don't react, we shape.
Right. I think it's an interesting thought because as you're talking about the role of technology and AI, you can approach it, to build off of what you're saying, you can approach it as someone who's choosing to engage this in partnership with our Creator, or you can view it as something that, you know, from the beginning of time, humanity in part, not in its entirety, has been in competition with the Creator. So I think of the Tower of Babel, or I think of when you read throughout scriptures, assuming there's a familiarity with that in part, you know, the competition that angels had with God and wanting to be God. So is technology something we use in partnership or in competition with God, and what does that lead to? And I think there's good and bad things in all of that, but to refute it or push it away altogether, there are things that we're able to do today that we've never been able to do, and I think that there's a lot of good that does come from that.
You know, it's interesting. There was, and I think we'll close on this, there is this sense that we are in unprecedented territory, that there are new things, that there are new trends happening. But, and I'll finish with this. Again, this is a 17-page essay we're talking about in the New York Times, came out, I think, on Friday of last week. If you're just tuning in, we're with our faith and culture contributor, Pastor Jeff Loxton, on the program, talking about, can Silicon Valley find God? Which, I don't know, I think there's a better title out there, but who needs God if we have Google? And we're trying to answer that question. But the writer of this 17-page, I printed it out, essay in the New York Times, talks about a 1984 book called The Second Self, by a professor at MIT by the name of Sherry Turkle. And she writes that we see to the computer. This is 1984. This is bizarre. We see to the computer the power of reason. But at the same time, in defense, our sense of identity becomes increasingly focused on the soul and the spirit in the human machine. She says that if we want to make real progress on the question of ethics in technology, perhaps we must revisit the kind of romanticism that is described there. As we confront the question of what makes us human, let us not disregard the religions and spiritualities that make up our oldest kinds of knowledge. Whether we agree with them or not, they are our shared inheritance, part of the past, present, and future of humankind. Pastor Jeff, I've said on the show before, I do this show because I'm just so dang curious. I mean, I'm trying to figure out what are the real time applications of as we advance technologically, what does that mean? What does that mean for our humanity?
Right.
And it's not just you and I talking about it. I mean, this is a New York Times piece.
Sure.
Any final thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think as time continues to bear out within the faith community, I think people are looking at the perspective of where does this all lead? Those who are theologians read that through the lens of Scripture. Those who don't come from that background are able to peer into things that are going on right now through lenses that we've seemingly never had access to. I mean, we're not getting into this, but Bezos just took a group of people to outer space. You know, technological advancements right now are happening so rapidly, and I think it's exciting to live in this time. Personally, I view that through the lenses of someone who recognizes that we have a creator. And for those listening, I think it begs the question, you know, what does that mean for me? What does this mean in the context of the greater picture of humanity and eternity?
Fascinating piece. We'll close it out there. Can Silicon Valley Find God? A long essay, guest essay in the New York Times came out on Friday. Who needs God if we have Google? I would say we need God because we have Google. maybe that's the answer to the question.
Yeah.
Our faith and culture contributor, Pastor Jeff Loxton, comes on as a regular contributor because we believe for a healthy community life, we need to have those things bigger than ourselves as reference points. When everything is politics, then nothing is. So we have these conversations on Tipping Point. We'll be back. One more segment. Pastor Jeff Loxton will be a fly on the wall of Hope City Church, your church, on 22nd Street here in Tucson. When we're done, iconic muralist Joe Pagic live in studio. If you don't know the name, you know his murals. They're all over town. We'll meet the artist in just a few minutes. Lots to go here on Tipping Point. We'll be right back.
Listen to the live stream and find podcasts of your favorite shows at kvoi.com.
Hey there, Ari here with the Marinas team at Nova Home Loans. We share Zach's passion on Tipping Point of shaping yours and our community's best possible future. If that looks like purchasing a home in 2021, we want to be your partner in choosing the program that is the best possible decision for your financial and family goals. Call me at 878-7518 and let me know you heard us on Tipping Point to get started.
Ariel Ari Barrera, NMLS ID, 1982127. Nova Home Loans, NMLS number 3087, BK0902429, Equal Housing Opportunity.
Why I love where I live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many businesses, they had to make changes to their hours and operations during COVID-19. But I'm so excited to announce that they are now reopened for regular hours. Go to whyiloveWhereILive.com right now to see all the new products and offerings and plan a visit to their location at the MSA Annex on Cushing off the I-10 and Avenida del Convento. Why do you love where you live?
The Men in Black are back. FC Tucson is our city's own professional soccer team, featuring talent from around the country and the world. They're ready to get back to business and a winning season for Tucson fans. Each one of the 14 home games this season will be uniquely curated and feature the sights, smells, and sounds of Tucson, but with the intensity of a playoff berth at Keno Stadium. Tickets now on sale. Head to fctucson.com to get yours for an exciting season of high-flying football. fctucson.com.
You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Yenser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento.
The economy is moving forward, and Arizona businesses are looking at new opportunities and challenges as we emerge from COVID-19. Leading companies are planning how to respond to new business and rebuild their teams and are looking for critical talent now. The right talent in key positions will make all the difference, and having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge. Devin and her team at Talent Store will connect you with top talent while positively impacting time to hire, retention, and your employer brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and scheduling time with Devin and her team.
Trusted local news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
And we're back, Tucson, and all of Southern Arizona here in the Common Workspace Studios for this Wednesday morning drive time hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. We're in studio for the next few minutes with our friend and faith and culture contributor, Pastor Jeff Loxton of Hope City Church right here in the 22nd Street Corridor in Tucson. Again, when we wrap up, Joe Padgett, iconic Tucson muralist, is on. By the way, tomorrow we have a gubernatorial candidate on. I'm excited about that. Mr. Matt Salmon, who jumped into the Republican primary on that side. And sorry, Pastor Jeff, I'm going to slip this in, too. We just booked Katie Hobbs, too.
That's awesome.
On the Democratic side. So we're going to try to bring as many of the senatorial and gubernatorial candidates as we can starting tomorrow. Lots to go here this week on Tipping Point. But Pastor Jeff, we started last segment, Can Silicon Valley Find God? Who Needs God If We Have Google? Some interesting questions in a lengthy New York Times guest opinion piece on Friday of last week. I encourage listeners to go check it out on the podcast. We do a frequent faith and culture segment with you, Pastor Jeff, and often we like to kind of be a fly on the wall of what are you and your congregation talking about at this time? What are those reference points that create a healthy community life that you're talking about? So we'll end there. What's going on at Hope City?
Yeah, sure. And the pivot there, I think, or the commonality is community. And we've been talking about what does it look like to be a Christ follower in the context of community. So for those that may not be familiar, Mark 2 is a passage in Scripture where these four people grab their friend who is a paralytic, and they try to get him in front of Jesus with this hopes of seeing his life healed by Jesus. And the imagery there, the picture that I think connects to where you might be as a listener here, is that we all hopefully, you know, emerging from a pandemic, have that group of people around us that we would consider our close friends. Those people who we do life with, you know, that first phone call when something goes well, or that first phone call when something goes wrong. But in a year of isolation, if you will, where that's absent, where community is absent, it creates all kinds of tension, whether it's mental health, spiritual health. And so part of the discussion that we were having this past week was who's part of that entrusted circle? Who are those people that you reach out to? You know, in our first segment, we talked about who needs God when you have Google. And I think we're, as a community, as a society, finding out how important relationships are in this time.
Yeah, I was trying to find it on the fly. I don't think I'm being successful, and I promise I read much more outside of the New York Times. I'm bringing it up quite a bit today, but it's just by chance. There was an article in the New York Times talking about how what we've missed in the last year and a half, mm-hmm, is human connection.
Sure.
And we have found many ways to artificially create that,
right,
through Zoom, through telecommunications, and all those I think are good advancements. But we can't get stuck thinking that we can get away with seeing each other on screens or on the phone and that's enough.
Right.
There is this built-in human connection drug,
right,
that fuels so much of who we are.
Yeah.
We've been missing it for the last year and a half, and I don't think we can underestimate the long-term impacts of that, Pastor Jeff.
Well, one of the things that excites me about being able to do this broadcast with you is, and I tell people quite literally, it's enriching to me to be face-to-face with you. We're able to do it, through the phone, but being able to come here and to have that face-to-face, the intersection that I get with other people from the community. And last week, shortly after our show and talking about how the faith community can intersect with other aspects of our society, we got a phone call at the church from a handful of students from University of Arizona in a program there that said, we're doing a study on the 22nd Street corridor. You happen to fall in that. Tell us more about the community. And so as we dialogued about that, these are guys who they're in their higher education and they're saying, we bring certain things to the table. I have no idea if we're on the same page when it comes to beliefs or values. And that's not why we're there initially. We're there first and foremost to see how we can be an encouragement to the community. And so we're going to continue that conversation. And that, to me, is a prime example of what you and I get to do together and how it is involving other segments of our community in a way that enriches Tucson as a whole.
Since you opened that can of worms, is there anything Sure. more you can share about is it an interview with you? Are they looking at the church as an institution in that community that is researching who's there and their needs? Is it in advance of a potential project?
Actually bigger than Hope City Church or myself personally, which I think is even more fascinating. I think this group of students interviewed five different people from five different segments of our neighborhood and said, these are skills that we can bring. How can we help? And through that discussion, learned about some of the addictive patterns in that community. And they said, from the medical field, we know that these things could potentially be a resource for you. And they're things that I had never thought about. And so we're taking next steps just to see, can we help address some of the key challenges that our city is facing along the 22nd Street corridor? These are two parts of our community that would rarely intersect. Except that we're in this time and place for such a time as this.
You know, it was funny, Pastor Jeff, not on my notes, but I was listening to a candidate forum for one of the ward races. We have a Democratic primary coming up in Tucson, and I'm a masochist, so I watch and listen to those things.
Right.
But one of the candidates was talking about, you know, how do you improve a neighborhood and how do you improve outcomes? And he mentioned a study that a church network has done in Tucson on the predictors of long-term family success and neighborhood and community stability.
Right.
And I went, whoa, that's crazy, you know? Because I think you and I often ask, like, what is the role of the church as an institution, you know, in a community, and what does that mean? And so I know we're always dabbling with that on the air, but it reminds me of, you know, again, these students reaching out to you, so that's cool.
Yeah, you're seeing that play out in vulnerable youth with organizations called Care Portal. There's lots of different entities that are now saying, how can we create community and means of bringing about restoration in those parts of our community that are really hurting?
Pastor Jeff Loxton, our faith and culture contributor here on the program, Hope City Church, your website as we head out.
Yeah, you can find us at hopecitychurchtucson.com.
Perfect. As always, thank you. We ask the big questions. We try to get closer to answering them, our frequent and regular faith and culture contributor. Joe Padgett, muralist in Tucson, is on next. We'll do a long segment with him. Meet the artist. That's on the other side. Don't go away, Tucson. We'll be back here in the Common Workspace Studios on 1030 The Voice. Tipping Point with Zach continues. In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
The Men in Black are back. FC Tucson is our city's own professional soccer team, featuring talent from around the country and the world. They're ready to get back to business and a winning season for Tucson fans. Each one of the 14 home games this season will be uniquely curated and feature the sights, smells, and sounds of Tucson, but with the intensity of a playoff berth at Keno Stadium. Tickets now on sale. Head to fctucson.com to get yours for an exciting season of high-flying football. fctucson.com.
Why I love where I live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many businesses, they had to make changes to their hours and operations during COVID-19. But I'm so excited to announce that they are now reopened for regular hours. Go to whyiloveWhereILive.com right now to see all the new products and offerings and plan a visit to their location at the MSA Annex on Cushing off the I-10 and Avenida del Convento. Why do you love where you live?
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
This is The Voice, 1030, Tucson's trusted news and talk.
And we're back, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. Welcome into the Common Workspace Studios for this morning's drive time hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I am your host, Zach Yenser. We just finished with our faith and culture contributor, Pastor Jeff Logsdon, on the program. Who needs God if we have Google? We tried to answer that question or just scratch the surface of it. Tomorrow, gubernatorial candidate running for governor, state of Arizona, Matt Salmon is on. We just booked Katie Hobbs as well, candidate on the Democratic side. So we're getting into those governor and senatorial candidates. That will be fun. But I am so excited about the final guest conversation of this hour. Been looking forward to this. Been a longtime admirer of both guests in studio. But our new one on the program, Joe Pagic, iconic Tucson muralist, is with us today. Also in studio here is my friend Kristen Tovar with Why I Love Where I Live. Kristen, good morning to you. You guys have an event on Friday that the public can come and attend. Those listening can participate in. Meet the artist, Joe Pagic, over at the Annex. So go ahead, let's hear from you and get us excited about Friday. And how do you know Joe?
Yeah, absolutely, Zach. It's great to be here. And I am the face behind Why I Love Where I Live and why the account on Instagram started. When I was in Tucson and was looking for things to appreciate and love, and it's funny how things come full circle now all these years later, being in studio here with Joe, because his murals and his work were some of the things that I started photographing and collecting, you know, as evidence that there were good things that I enjoyed in Tucson. And obviously that has grown over the years. And now we have a retail store and this wonderful opportunity to invite people into the space to meet people like Joe and other artists that make our community what it is visually. And yeah, it's just very exciting to have that all come full circle.
I love that. And I think it's powerful because part of your story, and you kind of hinted at it, someone who really struggled in and with Tucson for a while, and you went in and were venting to, I think the story is a barista.
Yep.
And they said, you know, they kind of checked you and said, why don't you do a personal Instagram posting pictures of things that you love about Tucson? So the founder of Why I Love Where I Live had to figure out first why she loved where she lived. And Joe, you were part of that magic.
Exactly.
And this place is better for it. So.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's exciting. We get to invite Joe into our shop on Friday.
Okay.
And you'll have the opportunity to meet him and learn more about him today as well on the show, but then also meet him in person. And he has some wonderful merchandise, stickers, prints of some of the murals that people love around Tucson that are iconic, as you mentioned.
I love it. I love it. Anything else, Kristen, before we swing the mic over to Mr. Joe Pagic?
I'm just excited to hear from Joe and hear a little bit more about his story and his work. So,
okay,
take it away.
All righty. Here we go. All right, going to get this. There we go.
Right
Joe.
There.
Yes,
yeah,
sir.
Hey.
Good to meet you.
Good morning.
Good to meet you. Yeah, we'll get you a little bit closer there so we can hear that baritone voice. So I want to get into who you are and what you're about, but I want to make sure that our listeners can pair what they've seen around town with you. So I started to kind of tease this segment by saying, if you don't know the name, right, if you don't know Joe Padgick, if you don't know his face, there is almost no way you've not seen his work. So give me two or three of kind of your iconic murals that people will go, oh, yeah, I've seen that one. So let's start
there. Yeah, I think the most known one now is probably the Whales over on Grant and Campbell where Bookman's was. That
yes,
one's huge.
That's
it's 6,000 square feet, so it's hard to miss. And then pretty much anything that's got animals or people riding bikes in murals around town, those are almost all me. I love cycling, and so I've gotten really involved in the cycling community. And then, you know, I used to do, if you've been here a while, I used to do all the ones on the side of the Rialto Theater.
Right.
I was the one who kicked that off way back in the day. And since then, the torch has passed to other people. I, you know, eventually got burnt out doing multiple murals every 2 weeks there, and then on top of all these big ones. So those are a few of my, I guess, greatest hits.
Yep. And then there's one just a block down from here that's yours too, right? Right by the Museum of Art block. Is that
oh,
you?
Oh, yeah.
That was more animals on cycling,
right?
More animals on bikes.
And I'm actually working on four murals at the same time right now. So I've got two going in on 4th Avenue where Plush used to be. I've got one right down the street here in Hexagon, and then I've got one going in at Himmel Park. So I'm juggling all those just based on what the weather's like each day.
Amazing.
So I'm staying busy. Yeah.
I think my origin story of knowing who Joe Padgick is, that this is the first time we've met, but like you were saying, you'll often tell stories of how you're painting, and you'll have your back to people, and you'll be having these conversations, so they know who you are.
Right, yeah.
So this is my story. I used to work over at Connect Co-working before it closed, and so I would streetcar in or drive in or park or whatever, and I'd walk by the Rialto, so I got to see the revolving door of, oh, one of his paintings is coming down, and his next one's going up. Now we know who you
and
are.
And actually, with Connect, all that really old paint in there on the walls and the chipped up plastic, that was all faked by me. And and that really old spooky stairwell with all the graffiti and the ripped posters, also faked by me.
That's hilarious.
That was a brand new stairwell.
We were told not to go up that stairwell. I really don't know what's on top of that. We were told never to
go
up there.
It's the roof.
Okay.
It's really good views.
So you faked a creepy stairwell really well, Joe Padgick. Oh, man. Okay, I want to backtrack a little bit then. We'll get to know you. So I wanted to put a face to the mural, a name to the mural. People know who you are now. Born and raised in Tucson?
Yep, yeah.
And still here?
You know what? I love it here. It's a great home base. I love to travel. But this place is extremely supportive of anything creative or artistic. And the community will put like their money and their support and their promotion efforts behind anything anybody does here that's creative, and I like really love that about Tucson.
That's
so
really cool.
It keeps me here.
That's really cool. I want to ask how you got into doing these murals, but you're born and raised here. I think it's always an interesting perspective. How do you view the city today? What have you seen change over the years, good or bad?
You know, I think that growing up here, like, Tucson's managed to maintain a lot of its charm that it had even, you know, I'm 40 years old now, so I've been around a while, and, you know, it's changing a little bit, but the way things are changing, I think people are managing to keep some of that charm that it had back then, but still bring in a lot of cool stuff, you know, like, downtown, when I was younger, was a scary place to be, and there was cool stuff going on down here, but it was, you know, a little dangerous, and there wasn't that much to do unless you were tapped into some of these more underground communities. And now I think we've maintained a lot of that down here if you know where to look.
Right.
But there's also, you know, all these wonderful restaurants and shops and bars, and you know, it brings crowds from all over the city down that you can mingle with, and I absolutely love it down here still. So I mean, I think it's changing, but it's still kind of maintaining a little bit of its tie to the past, which is great.
Right. You know, I think this is, again, you and Why I Love Where I Live are going to do an event. It's on Friday, I believe, and I've shared it on my social media. Listeners can find it there and on your Facebook page, Kristen, Why I Love Where I Live. But I think that's the theme the three of us share, and, you know, why obviously I'm proud to have Why I Love Where I Live as a partner of the program, is that ultimately we have to build on our – we have to – build on our past to create the future. And we can't lean into just the future or just rely on just the past. And I know there's so many in Tucson who would like to do one or the other. I think the right way is to build on the past to create the future. And so I think you're a part of that, Joe, and I think that's the sense of things that I just got from your answer to that question. So how did you get into doing 6,000 square foot murals? How did that happen?
Do you want the short answer or the long answer?
For the medium answer.
Okay. I never planned on being an artist, honestly, for a living. I took a drawing class sophomore year of college, and my teacher pulled me aside and said, "You should be an artist for a living. You're really good." And I was like, nobody makes an art living as an artist, you know? She was like, "You can do it." And so I switched majors and went for it. And when I graduated, I put an ad in the paper, artist for hire, and just started taking any job that I could get.
That aged you just a little bit.
Yeah.
You put an ad in the paper.
Ad in the paper, 10 cents or whatever it cost, you know, in the classifieds. And I just started getting like little tiny jobs. But I didn't need much at the time, you know. I have my little beater car and my tiny little place. And I just, like, within 3 months of graduating college, I was making a living doing art. And I've just been doing it for the last 16 years. And it's been amazing. And I say yes to everything. I'm always trying to branch out and do different things. I've been in, like, ballets, dancing and live painting on stage. I build all sorts of sets. I throw costume parties. Like, you know, it's anything that's fun and weird and artistic, yes, and keeps me from getting bored. So, that's how I got here. But I love doing murals because you put the same amount of effort into a mural that you do into, like, a painting, let's say. And a mural, it impacts just thousands of people's lives, even if it's in a small way. It, you know, makes them smile, and it brightens their city, and it brightens their day. And if you're just painting for a gallery, like, very few people will ever see that. So,
yeah.
I think my favorite part of being a muralist is just that impact on the community for the better. And I always try to design my art in a way that it brings a smile to people's faces. Like, none of my stuff is challenging or political or, you know, it's always uplifting and fun. That's kind of the impression I want to leave on the world.
You know, I think, and these were not in my notes at all, but I think one of the things that's unique about what you do that I think is impactful is that it is something that is enjoyed and valued and owned by people who have been here for 40 years and people who have been here for 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the hey, here's the mural tour of Tucson. But it's not just a tourist trap, you know, that hipsters from Oregon fly in to see. I mean, they do, but that's the only group that it serves. I mean, there are people who've been here for four generations and for 40 minutes who are like, well, this is really cool. And part of my time in Tucson is going to be checking out the murals. And so I think that's really special. And that just came to mind as you were talking. Some softball questions to close us out, Joe. Your favorite mural in Tucson that you've done?
That I've done?
Yeah.
You know, I think it's still the cowboy and the woman riding on their bikes and their dresses turning into the sunset. That one...
Is that Stone?
That's on Stone and Sixth, okay. Yeah. And that
I
was
went out
the
on a
first...
limb there. If I got that wrong, that wouldn't have been good, but
that
Stone
was the
and
first
Sixth.
Public mural I did that was totally my own.
Really?
Everything else was, you know, funded by somebody, so they had a say in it. That one, I designed it, I put it on Kickstarter, and we had over 300 private donations.
Wow.
And
Kristen
was
one of them. Were you okay? Kristen over here in the corner was violently pointing at herself.
But it was so cool to, like, you know, because you don't know how many people are really supporting you out there. You get, you know, high fives and whatever. But that, like, really showed that the community supported, you know, what I was doing. And it was so cool to get to paint my own art on that wall and, like, kick that off. So that was, I think that's still my favorite just because of that.
I love it. Alrighty, a little bit of an edgy question.
Yeah.
But you seem like a humble dude that likes to give people credit. What's the favorite mural in Tucson not done by you?
Ooh, that's a really good question. Wow, there's so many good murals here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah, this is not in order. There's so much good here, but anyone that just comes to mind.
I mean, can I just list some muralists that I love?
Let's do it. Yeah, let's do three or four.
Jessica Gonzalez is amazing. Rock Martinez does some really cool stuff. There's a girl who I'm working with right now named Catherine Joyce, who's just starting out, but her stuff is killer. Like, I want to see more of her stuff. And then I have a few other artists who are working with me who are also just doing amazing stuff.
I think we've had Johnny Ballesteros on the show. I think he's a muralist. Mm-hmm. I think more Southside, I think.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then, like Ignacio Garcia does really amazing stuff. You've seen some of his stuff around town. I mean, there's so many good muralists. Like, I'm just one of many. But, I don't know what my favorite other mural would
be. That's okay. We can leave it there with the shout-outs of great artists.
Yeah.
You're an iconic one in my mind, Joe. Again, we're with Joe Padgick. If you don't know the name, haven't seen the face, you've seen the murals. Is there a place where people can go? We're going to wrap up here. Is there a place where people can go to find a list, or if they want to do a self-guided tour of Joe Padgick murals? Has that been done? That's had to have been done.
Yeah. So
Kristen's
probably
done it, right? No, somebody. Joe's done it. Well, that's good.
There's one on my website.
Okay.
And I don't know how outdated it is, but I think it's got like 20 of them on there at least. So my website's just joepadgick.net.
Okay.
And then there's a number of people in town who have been going around kind of putting these things together, and I've been shocked to see how many murals these people find that I didn't even know about. You know, I mean, they've got hundreds and hundreds of murals that they're hunting down. So it's a hobby for some people, like treasure hunting. It's cool. But anyway, I mean, they're all over the place if people want to go look for them.
Yeah. Joe, thanks. I think it looks like you actually took time away from what mural you're doing to come in and do this.
Yeah.
you're taking more time. It was a very authentic experience. Thank you. You're taking more time away on Friday, July 23rd. That's this week from 6 to 8 p.m. at Why I Love Where I Live at the MSA Annex. I think it's cool that you made time to come in here and talk to me. I think it's even cooler that you're going to democratize that experience and more people can come and meet you and ask some of these questions and hang out, get to know what you're about. MSA Annex, Why I Love Where I Live, Meet the Artist, Friday, July 23rd, 6 to 8 p.m. If you're listening, don't miss that opportunity to meet Joe. Joe, thanks for the beauty and the art that you create, making Tucson a better place.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, Joe. Yeah. Great to meet you. And Kristen, thank you for arranging this. Thank you for what you do to be a platform to bring people together to figure out why we love where we live and how this is a great place, but also not skirting the hard questions.
Yeah,
we have to have one foot in the pothole and one foot on the moon. We get to do that in our cities and communities. So thank you so much. All right, man, I was excited for that conversation. Let's go to our final break of the hour. When we come back, we'll wrap it up. This Drive Time Morning Hour, Wednesday, July 21st. We're here in the Common Workspace Studios on 1030 The Voice. We'll be right back.
The next generation of talk. Tipping Point with Zach Gentzer, 1030 The Voice.
In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
When looking at retirement planning, conventional thinking asks, how do I get a higher return? Should I take on more risk or is there a better product? Jason Robinson and his team at MassMutual focuses on the overall strategy first. He and his team of advisors have the tools necessary to measure the proper balance of investments and actuarial science for the best path possible for the highest retirement income. Call Jason and his team at 520-274-3749 to have them run through an analysis at no cost to see how much more efficient you can be, and tell them Zach sent you over.
You may not have heard the term fiduciary, but if you're working with a financial professional, it's important to know what a fiduciary means. A fiduciary, per license, has the duty to put the client's best interest first. In other words, your interests over our own. My name is Jeff Jr. with Trajan Wealth, and as a fiduciary, we must choose the best investment product available and have reasonable basis for that advice. Most financial professionals are simply paid a commission for selling you a product. Trajan Wealth is fee only, which means we're paid a low flat fee. And that gives us incentive to grow your portfolio because our interests are aligned. If you're working with someone who is more interested in selling you a product or seems more interested in making a quick commission, then call me, Jeff Jr., and our team of fiduciaries at Trajan Wealth. 321-4100. 321-4100. Or visit TrajanWealth.com.
Investment advisory services offered through Trajan Wealth and SEC Registered Investment Advisor.
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
Tucson's source for trusted news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
Good morning, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. We are wrapping up this Wednesday morning drive time hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser, Matt working the magic on the other side of the glass. Matt, that last segment with Joe Padgett, iconic Tucson muralist, I don't think that's hyperbolic to say, is one of the reasons why it has been so fun as we head towards our four-year anniversary on the show, which I can't believe it's been almost 4 years, but I keep doing this because what a great opportunity to meet some amazing people who are doing just really cool things in the community. I'd never met Joe before, but what a cool dude. I really enjoyed that conversation, Matt.
Fantastic. And it's kind of like a little bit of a scavenger hunt when you can go around town and see some of these things. So it's always kind of, I don't know, just kind of add something to your day as in your goings on about town to be able to go and see some of these.
Absolutely, absolutely. We've got a few short minutes. Let's close on this. Matt, I know you and I have been following pretty closely. It was funny. I had an event for an organization that I'm a part of last evening, and it was during the first half of the Suns game, and I had a friend message me and say, "Ugh, you know, I want to come to the event as well, but then there's the Suns game." And I said, "Look, it's going to be done before halftime, and hey, if the Suns win it, it goes to game seven. If they lose, it's going to be heartbreaking. And wouldn't you rather be with friends anyway?" And I was right. That's how I felt at the end, Matt. It was heartbreaking to watch the end of that game. It was heartbreaking.
Yeah, and you know, the Suns kept it close throughout the game, but you just never got the impression that they were going to pull away. And Giannis, he hung 50 points on him. I mean, you can't argue with that. And I think the bottom line to me watching was just that the Bucks just played a really physical game, forced the Suns into an inside game, and the Suns just couldn't keep up with the physicality.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I obviously was rooting for the Suns. It's hard to root against Giannis. I mean, a good dude, doesn't get in trouble, was drafted by the Milwaukee Bucks, stayed with them. I think he made this comment yesterday. He took kind of a side swipe against some of his fellow players in the league. There's been this tendency to go and just build super teams, right? You get the Hardens, the Durants, the Kyrie Irvings together, and you patchwork these super teams for 1 or 2 year stretches. And of course, they have an advantage. This building from the bottom up, like the Milwaukee Bucks, and honestly, Matt, the Suns as well, that building up from the bottom just doesn't happen as much anymore. And I think that was a cool storyline of this finals match. It was two teams with loyal players who built it up the original way. And it's hard to dislike that guy who stuck with his team, stuck with his city, stuck with his craft, and ultimately succeeded and did it by putting up 50 points. I obviously wanted the Suns to win, but I can't hate Giannis. I just can't do it. And props to the Suns team and to Monty Williams for that run. That was absolutely incredible.
So they took it, you know, third time, and I've been a fan for all three, and saw the first one as a kid in Phoenix, and
ooh,
you know, it's they keep knocking on the door every 20 years or so, but you know, yeah, you can't argue with Giannis. That was a good news story, and the Suns' outside shooting just wasn't there for them last night, and they got outplayed. So it was a great run for them. Always like to see them go deep into the playoffs, and they'll have another day.
You know, I love the clip too, Matt, and I think we'll have to close on this because the time is moving fast. The Bucks, of course, won a game six last night, 105-98, beat the Suns in six games, 4-2. Milwaukee Bucks are this year's champions. But Monty Williams, I love it, went into the locker room of the Milwaukee Bucks, congratulated them, celebrated them, said good job. You know, the Suns are going to be back. They're a young team. Monty Williams is just a good dude, and really great to see good sportsmanship, good, good chivalry, just good people, and really proud of those Suns. So I think there's some wins in there. Maybe not on the scoreboard, but there's some long-term wins. I hope I'm not too optimistic.
Absolutely. Good sportsmanship is always valued and treasured, and that reminded me of 1981 when the Arizona Wildcats football team pulled a stunning upset of USC at the Coliseum in LA. I believe the Trojans were either rated number, I think they were number one ranked or number two ranked. I believe they were number one ranked that day. And, you know, the Suns took it to them. Wildcats were an unknown football team. And Larry Smith was just starting. And John Robinson, the coach of the Trojans, came into the Wildcats locker room, congratulated them on a great job. And, good sportsmanship is a good thing. Good example.
Absolutely. Yep. Good man. Well, we'll take another whack at it, Matt. the Suns will be back, hopefully fourth time's a charm, and hopefully the fourth time watching, they'll get it done, but they'll be around for a while. Tucson and all of Southern Arizona, that about does it for this Wednesday edition of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. Drive time every morning, Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. We are here talking about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. We'll be back tomorrow, and we'll talk with Devin Underwood, our contributor, discussing how to get Tucson's workers and employers back to work well here. Our first-time guest on the program will be Matt Salmon. He's running for governor of the state of Arizona as a Republican. We just got Katie Hobbs booked as well. We're going to cover everything and everyone who wants to come on the program talking about the Arizona issues that matter. We'll kick it off with Matt Salmon tomorrow. So that's our program. Hugh Hewitt coming up next today. Bill Buckmaster at noon, as always. Keep it right here on 1030 The Voice for all the local news and issues and conversation that matters to you. Stay safe out there. Stay cool. We'll see you on Thursday, Tucson.